Well, now, I told you I was going to talk a little bit on consciousness. I don't know whether they bore you or what, but I'll do my best. So today I'll share with you the theme of the talk that I gave at Durham and Chapel Hill about 6 months ago on consciousness. The theme was on Mehrbaba and consciousness, with some recent thoughts that have come to me along this line of research. Many aspects of the spiritual path have seemed much clearer when placed in the background of this one word, consciousness. Also, certain sayings of Baba, hitherto difficult to understand, seem now more clear. How I came to live to the present time so unaware of the importance of this one word is a mystery. Mehrbaba has used the word so frequently in God Speaks and in his discourses in relation to various aspects of the spiritual path, but somehow mind overlooked the significance of this one word. The time, we say, was not ripe. And here I would like to mention how valuable it is to follow Baba's advice that we should read and reread his books, for at each reading you will grasp something previously overlooked. Baba said many years back, "Learn to read me and you will need no other books." And I recall very clearly Baba telling several visitors to the center when the book God Speaks came out to read it through 3 times. To some it was even an order. Now in my own experience I realize how vital is Baba's advice if we don't want to miss what Baba has given us in explanation. To return now to this word consciousness in relation to the spiritual path, a word in common use today, but in the early 30s, when I met Baba, the word awareness was more frequently in use. However, although the word consciousness appears so frequently in Mehrbaba's 2 important books, God Speaks and the Discourses, I cannot recall in our early years with Baba his using or emphasizing this word to any great extent. If he did, I was not aware of it at the time. The words we were familiar with were love for Baba and obedience that follows from that love, and to try and please him. And anyway, during that first decade, there were no books to read. The Discourses and God Speaks were not yet published. Looking back, however, I realized that above all other aspects of our early years with Baba in India and in the West, there was one fine thread woven into or onto the canvas, and that fine word, as I see it today, concerned consciousness. Baba silently and continuously was working on this one theme. Why, for instance, did he so frequently call us to be with him, to sit with him, to play various games with him, ping-pong, volleyball, numerous card games? And his various disciplines, his occasional orders, his assigned duties, why? He was working, I realize now, to bring our consciousness away from self and away from the many objects of illusion and duality, its wants and desires, to the one and only object of himself. And apparently to do this at this stage, he needed us to be with him and in his presence for a greater part of the time. He appeared never to tire of having us around, and his constant inquiry, "What are you thinking of?" And who can forget his smile and, yes, his twinkling eye when you could reply, "Of you, Baba." Just think of it day by day, sitting with Baba, sharing food with him, playing various games, indoors and outdoors with Baba, in constant touch and companionship with infinite consciousness, infinite divine love which Baba was and is, and yet never comprehending it. Baba was just friend and companion. It was, I think, as he wanted it, whilst winning our love so spontaneously and at the same time watching our consciousness being gently shifted unconsciously to himself as the one object of consciousness. This gradual shifting of consciousness grew as our love for Baba deepened. And how did our love grow? Baba showed an interest in our pursuits. He made us feel he needed us. He found work for us to do. He tried to please us, showing us at the same time what we could do to please him. Don't many of us feel, and yes, witness when we visit Mehrabad and Mehrazad, that we are meeting face to face with those whose consciousness is completely absorbed in this one object of consciousness, Baba, and yet at the same time immersed in the daily duties assigned to them? A perfect balance of head and heart. I feel they had already learned this lesson of a shift of consciousness from the many to the one in their very early years of training, before the Westerners were first called to India. And later in 1939, 6 years after our first contact with Baba, I feel Baba was preparing us to take us too on this great step of a shift of consciousness more directed to the one than to the many. It was, I recall, when we were in Nasik, that I at any rate was called one day, and with reason, and Baba just spelt out on the board, "Learn to love the one in the many, and not the many in the one. I am the only friend who will never let you down." And then said, "Now go." No more than that. I was left to bring up into consciousness the purpose of the rebuke or reprimand that Baba had made me conscious of. So it was in Nasik in this year of 1937, when Baba had a number of Westerners living together with a few of the Easterners, that due to a variety of ego minds, it was not easy at all times to live together in harmony. And this was Baba's opportunity, and alert as he always was to such an occasion, he one day called us together, brought to our notice this lack of harmony, saying how it interfered with his work, and therefore he would give us an alternate ego to work with, an ego centered on and devoted to himself. He called it a provisional ego, which sometime later he said could be discarded when it had done its work. Now the value of this provisional ego I see now lay in the fact that it brought a shift in consciousness, away from the many objects to that of the one, Baba himself. This change of direction brought about immediately an increase in our love for him, which evidently was lacking. And it worked this way. Before beginning whatever Baba had given us to do, we were to say, "Baba is doing this or that through me. He is the doer, the speaker, the thinker. Therefore, the results of our actions, failure or success, were his, and there was no need for us to worry." I think of all the lasting lessons that Baba gave us, helping us along the spiritual path, this emphasis on the provisional ego remains the most constant, because it lifts our self-centered ego consciousness away from ourselves to Baba and helps increase our love for Baba. And as Baba said, helps in the elimination of the ego. Baba was always so vigilant and alert to each moment's opportunity. And how many are the opportunities, be they so small and unimportant to us, we miss throughout the day to give that smile, that word of interest, that intuitive response that would help others, simply through the inability to keep consciousness on Baba. We often had our chance to cooperate with Baba in his instant reaction to the moment, but if we impeded it in any way, by our thoughts being elsewhere, Baba would be displeased, and he allowed us to learn this through his change of mood. Once on a visit to Mount Generoso in Switzerland with Baba in 1932, we walked into an inn, and to Baba's joy we found a ping-pong table, and we started in turns to play ping-pong. Then all of a sudden, Baba grew serious, put down the bats, and we were all called to hear an explanation about planes and how one gets from the sixth to the seventh plane. Some of us were in a laughing mood, and try as he would, Baba could not get us into a serious mood. And one of us laughingly suggested, "Well, can't we go outside and play instead?" Baba conceded, but he was not pleased. And later, Dr. Ghani came to me and said, "Many of these explanations which Baba is giving you now, we have never heard. And he will only explain when he is in the mood. And if you laugh, joke, or seem disinterested, the mood to tell will pass from Baba, and you will lose altogether what he wanted to tell you. So do all try to control your laughter when Baba seems ready to talk." For Baba, it was a ceaseless struggle, or else he would never have said to us, "You are hard nuts to crack." How hard in those early days was that shell of obstinacy, ignorance, and constant argument. Only Baba's infinite patience could succeed in his work of shifting our consciousness to his consciousness, a love consciousness, a consciousness less concerned with self and more conscious of him, and others, and through it all was Baba's magnetic love, pulling us ever closer through this change of consciousness, brought about only by his love for each one of us. And this was noticeable not only with the immediate Mandalay and the earlier Westerners, but in his work with the mosques and the crowds, the feeding of the thousands, the gifts of money or grain, visits to schools, the blind, the lepers. No activity left out, no opportunity lost for contact, for bringing about this change of consciousness by a glance, sometimes a touch and a smile. And yes, once in the interest in the bellboy, I remember, who was setting the lunch table. This latter instance happened in Lahore, I think in 1945, and Baba was on a mosque tour and had some of the women Mandalay with him, still in seclusion, and myself staying at a local hotel. And I was helping the boy put dishes on the table, ready for our lunch when the girls would come in, and Baba suddenly appeared. And he takes the dishes himself from the boy, puts them on the table, smiling and communicating with him in his own way. And I soon realized what Baba was doing, and that he really wanted me to disappear. Baba wanted that boy's consciousness momentarily on him. And if that was done, then Baba's work for the moment was accomplished. When the seed bears fruit, that's in Baba's own time, but the seed he has to plant. At a much later date in the barn in Myrtle Beach in 1952, when Baba held an open day and hundreds passed by Baba, afterwards Elizabeth asked Baba how he was able to help each other when they passed by so quickly. And Baba's reply was that a glance, a handshake was sufficient. Also, if they lingered, the mind that worked so rapidly would slip in and take over possibly from the impact of the heart that Baba was trying to touch and bring about a consciousness of himself, the one in the many. It is perhaps interesting that this constant alertness of Baba in his work of raising or shifting consciousness is equally noticeable in Baba's work with the animal kingdom. There is not time here to mention but one instance that comes to mind, and that was of the dog Warrior, the only companion Baba had allowed to be with him during his seclusion in the special room on Mehrabad Hill. Warrior fell sick after the seclusion and died within a week or two. And Baba's message to his Mandalay was, quote, "I wanted the company of a faithful soul other than human. Now his work is over and he is gone. No one should feel sorry for his death. He is fully rewarded. Henceforth he will not incarnate as an animal, but as a human being." Baba once said that when God becomes man, he gives a spiritual push and a raise in consciousness to mankind. And in his divine state as avatar, he becomes a perfect friend for each and every species in creation. In Kashmir 1933, Baba told us, quote, "Certain animals have inside intuition and inspiration, but as they are not fully conscious, do not know what they are." We will pass on now to a saying of Eldridge's that says, "Since love and faith are gifts of grace, and perfect obedience is not in the grasp of any one of us, then all we can do is to try and please Baba." And Baba, answering our need to know how to please, gave us three ways in which we could try to please him, and in trying to please, would grow in our love for him. Now note how positive these are. One, think of things that you will not hesitate to think of in my presence. Two, speak words that you will not hesitate to speak in my presence. Three, act and do things that you will not hesitate to act in my presence. And to the above I would add a later statement, think of me, remain cheerful in all your trials, and I will be with you, helping you. It is sometimes said that there are few disciplines that Baba has stressed for the path. But could we really find a stricter inner discipline than these four points with their stress on obedience? Very straightforward and at first glance simple and not so difficult. But more recently came the realization that these points cannot be acted on 100% and obeyed unless there were first the consciousness of Baba's presence throughout, with Baba's love as the object of that consciousness. And how can this be achieved? And this quest set me searching through the many writings of Meher Baba on consciousness, not in relation to the planes of consciousness as found in God Speaks, That was not what I was searching for, but consciousness in relation to the daily living and what would be helpful to us all. And these are the following passages that I found. Quotes on consciousness. 1. I am ever conscious that I am in you, but you are never conscious that I am in you. Daily I support you and share your consciousness. Now I want you to uphold me and share my consciousness one day. 2. The journey on the spiritual path, from its beginning to end, is a journey from unconscious God to conscious God. Evolution is consciousness. Reincarnation is consciousness. Involution is consciousness. All is consciousness, the highest being infinite consciousness, divine love. When misdirected, it is illusion. When directed to reality, it is infinite. Its misdirection is ignorance. 3. Consciousness, whether free in having reality for its object or bound to the object in illusion, is one, and consciousness becomes infinite when it takes reality as the object of its consciousness. You are all one with the ocean, yet separate in consciousness. Every one of you is, in one form or another, the divine manifestation. You are all in me, I am in you all. And the only way to realize God and experience His consciousness is through love. Love for God and love for one another. Worry not over the past, be vigilant in the present. All apparent differences are only differences in states of consciousness. Nothing comes, nothing goes. There is only this continual shifting of consciousness. The shifting of consciousness, this is the task ahead of us all. In which direction are we all moving? Is the object of consciousness reality, truth, Baba, or is it bound to the objects of duality and illusion? For there can be no compromising. Baba tells us the shift of consciousness can be done through love, a selfless, giving love. Have you ever thought of those words of Baba, in me I am free, but in you I am bound, and this is my crucifixion? It is your ego mind that binds you, and your ego mind that binds me in you. Is not Baba speaking of his own infinite consciousness that is bound in each one? What a challenge and what a privilege. What a work Baba has found for each of us to do to help free his own consciousness bound in us. He wrote me once in 1933, quote, "My work is the conscious realization of myself in all creation. I alone do my work, but I allow you, my close ones, to work for me so that you have the opportunity to use your talents and capabilities selflessly, so as to draw closer to me." End of the quote. Of course, all work is God's work. The creative arts, the caring for children, the sweeping of the porch. What we have to be mindful of is the thread of consciousness that must permeate all work, the motivation. But for today, the work we are considering is how to shift that consciousness to Baba, the highest of all consciousness, divine love, which is at the same time the one and only true consciousness. I often wonder when Mahababa answered that question put to him as to which yoga to follow out of the many yogas, and his reply was, "You go and I come." Did he mean let go of your consciousness full of wants and desires, and I will be there as the one object of consciousness? I like Cousin Sarkis's way of expressing it in reference to sharing in this work of God, freeing himself within each one of us. Quote, "This life becomes a crusade in the service of God. Whether we wish it or not, we set out as crusaders to free not the Holy Sepulchre, but Baba or God buried in matter and in our souls." What a divine work is this shifting of consciousness to himself. Nevertheless, we have to remember, as Baba has told us, that the binding of himself in us is his own doing. It was all along God's plan that this reality gets buried in the ego mind, attached to illusion as the object, to enable the individual drop within the ocean to find its way back to God consciously. What a game! And Baba has called it the greatest detective story. And quoting him again, he said, "If you want to blame anyone for your present predicament, blame me, who am the author and the actor of the game. A game just for the sake of love, that God himself, the drop in each, may consciously realize his oneness with the ocean." And here I'd like to read you, before I continue, from this book here on there. I found something just during today, appropriate of that. I think we've all read Hababa compares, no, that's, let's take it, life as a big play, of which is the actor. And he says, "The drama of the continued life of the individual soul has many acts. From the point of view of the worldly existence of the soul, a curtain may be said to be drawn over its life after the closing of each act." That means, I think, each life. "But no act yields its real significance if regarded as complete. It has to be taken in a wider context as a link between the acts that have passed and the acts that are still to come. Its meaning is in the theme of the whole drama of which it is a part. The end of the act is not the end of the theme. The actors disappear from the stage of earth only to reappear again in new capacities and new contexts. And we, the actors, you see, are so engrossed in their respective roles that they treat them as the be-all and end-all of all existence, and for the major part of their continued life, running into innumerable incarnations, they are unconscious of the truth that the author of the drama, in his imaginative production, himself became all the actors and played the game of hide-and-seek in order to enter into full and conscious possession of his own creative infinity. The author has to play the parts of the actors to know himself as the creator of the great detective story worked out through the cycles of creation." And I think here, I'm just thinking, something comes into my mind, it is an interesting point that we are drops. Just in the same way as Baba was a drop when the world began. He was the first drop, and he made his way back to conscious God. And we said to him one day, "Well, Baba, how did you get back to God consciously when there was no perfect master to take you in the last step from the sixth to the seventh plane? But you never catch Baba." Oh, he said, "God played that part for me, you see." But successively afterwards, each one of us is another drop from that same drop from which the avatar himself came. And we, therefore, are all in a sense avatars, although we'll never do that work. But Baba himself is each one of the drops in each one of us, treading the same path to recognize and to be able to get his way back consciously to God. And you know, that makes a very great difference, I think, in our daily life, when we think what a big responsibility is, that very drop, that real self in each one of us, is one of those drops from the ocean of which Baba is. So he says, "I am bound in you." He is the one that's bound. And I think it's quite a good question to ask ourselves at the end of the day. Well, is Baba more bound in us through what we've done during the day, or is he less bound? Or as Kazim Sarkis says it, has the drop or has God ascended in us during the day, or have we caught his descent? It's an interesting thought. We always think it's we who are wanting the God realization. I want God realization. I want this. But it isn't that false self of us wanting God realization. It is that drop himself, like the first drop, wanting to go back from where he came. And he's using us, our ego minds, as this little article said, as the means of getting there. So Baba can truly say, "In myself I am free, but in you I am bound. But I have bound myself through your own ego minds in order to get back consciously where I came from." I think it's an interesting thought. Well, now to go back to the shifting of consciousness that Baba referred to, if I recall correctly, as one surrender after another. What eons of degrees of consciousness between the two poles of consciousness? And quoting Pierre Desjardins, he says there are as many wavelengths of consciousness as there are human forms. And looking back through notes of our visit to Kashmir with Baba in 1933, I found the following apropos of our present thought. Quote, this is Baba: "When the evolution of consciousness began, there was oneness in spite of the diversity in illusion. But with the growth of consciousness, manyness went on increasing until it is about to overlap the limit. The time has come for the preordained destruction of multiple separateness, which keeps man from experiencing the feeling of unity in brotherhood. The world is evolving back to oneness, only it is conscious. End of the quote. Some of you may recall Meher Baba's last message given in October 1954 in Hindi, translated into English by Dr. Mitchbrook. And this, I think, explains the above message and shows how Meher Baba is working to bring this oneness, already quoted about, into effect. And this message was given on the 7th of October 1954. And I quote, I think Baba had spoken of his rather soon dropping of the body, and everybody was very much disturbed and began writing to him, what did he really mean by this? And Baba said, there is no reason at all for any of you to worry. Baba was, Baba is, and Baba will also be eternally existent. Severance of external ties does not mean the termination of internal links. It was only for establishing the internal connection that the external contacts have been maintained till now. The time has now come for being bound in the chain of internal connections. Hence, external contact is no longer necessary. It is possible to establish the eternal link by obeying Baba's orders, and I give you all my blessings for strengthening these internal links. I am always with you, and I am not away from you. I was, am, and will remain eternally with you. And it is for promoting this realization that I have severed external contact. This will enable all persons to realize truth by being bound to each other with internal links. O my lovers, how I love you all. It is only because of my love for my creation that I have descended on earth. Let not your hearts be torn asunder by my declarations concerning the dropping of my body. On the contrary, accept my divine will cheerfully. You can never escape from me, even if you try to escape from me. It is not possible to get rid of me. Therefore, have courage and be brave. If thus you lose your hearts, how will it be possible for you to fulfill the great task which I have entrusted to you? Be brave and spread my message of love far and wide to all quarters, in order to fulfill my divine will. Let the words Baba Baba come forth from every nook and corner of the world and from the mouth of every child, and let their ignorance be reduced to ashes by the burning flame of my love. Come together in order to fulfill my will by taking your stand on truth, love and honesty, and be worthy of participation in my task. I give you all my blessings for spreading my message of love. Signed, Meher Baba. And where to find the internal link that Meher Baba speaks of? Surely through the shifting of consciousness from the many to the one, Baba, as the object of consciousness, infinite love. To quote again from this chart number 7 in God Speaks, the new edition, entitled Real Awakening Through Love. Baba says, to be worthy of the divine gift of this love, let all your thoughts, words, and deeds be controlled by the constant remembrance of God. This surely is what we must do if we want to be really alive and filled with enthusiasm, another word for being alive with God. And so here we meet today, a part of that varied number of wavelengths of consciousness, innumerably diverse by nature, come together knowing ourselves to be, or at heart trying to be, one-pointed upon a single aspect of consciousness, Meher Baba, the one reality, infinite love. Names do not matter. And Baba, by his life, has shown us that not by running away from life, not by withdrawal, but by communicating and sharing of daily consciousness through loving one another, can we attain to that same infinite consciousness, infinite selfless love, which he longs for us to share and to be one with. However, he tells us that the lesser consciousness along the way are necessary for the experiences that we need for this growth in awareness. Some of you may know of Dick Anthony. He gave a talk recently at the center in which he quoted from a letter he had received in the early 60s from Meher Baba, dictated to Erich. And Erich was answering Dick's letter, asking Baba's advice as to what he should do with his life. Following Baba's instructions, Eric continued in the letter with the words, "Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry," all underlined. Dick could not understand because he was not worrying, consciously at least. And now today Dick told us that in his present work he was faced with problem after problem, and that 17 times during the day he was saying, "Don't worry over this, don't worry," and the problem would lift and disappear. And so perhaps if we start trying to remember Baba every time consciousness slips back from its one object into the many, we will be on the way to learning two valuable lessons, mental control and obedience, and thus be pleasing Baba. Also, instead of worrying over our lapses of the past, become more vigilant in the present. So often those words of St. Paul come to the surface of one's thought, "He that controlleth himself is greater than he that taketh the city." And as a passing thought, I feel how fortunate indeed are the children of our nearby community, and indeed of others far distant, whose consciousness so early on is spontaneously centered on Baba, their friend with love. Sundays the children visit his house, the Meher abode. Saturdays they see Baba films. Fridays they see Baba slides or hear Baba songs. Is there anything more worthwhile than this spontaneous shifting of consciousness towards Baba with their love and freedom? And the other evening at the center, after the slides were shown and the recitation of various poems started, a small voice in the third or fourth row piped out, "But more Baba, more Baba." And in the book room on another occasion, whilst trying to converse with the mother, the little boy just walked around and, pointing to the various pictures, said, "Baba, Baba, Baba." And crossing the bridge, I recall the child turned to our mother and said, "Is this heaven?" No reminder to tell them to think of Baba. Their consciousness is already awakened and with so much love. Really, Baba's new generation, isn't it? And can we think of this as a Baba happening? This young generation seems to share this one infinite consciousness to a degree not visible in the period before the two world wars, my world if you like. See too where this awakened consciousness through Baba's love is leading them. Increasingly towards service, work of some kind, ushering in this new brotherhood that Baba speaks of in the new humanity. And I would like to share with you a short article that I had from Professor Baum, who's present here now. You see, I told you a year or so back, and even longer, this question of consciousness has been on my mind, and I went to Erich with it and spoke to, I can think, at least two of my visits there, trying to get a little bit of information from him. And I also wrote to my friend Willie Baum about the same thing. So you see how the things that do really worry you sometimes, and this was one of them in my case. And this is what he wrote to me when I was asking about consciousness and Baba saying, "In me I am bound, but in you I am free. And my work is the freeing of myself in you." And these are some of the excerpts that William Baum sent me. Quote, "God's whim is to be conscious of himself. Now as a route to this goal, he has chosen first to make himself conscious and then to direct this consciousness to himself. The sole purpose of the creation is the implementation of this design. The many only exist for the one to know himself. The objects of consciousness during its evolution are the many. And after attainment of full consciousness in the human form, consciousness must shift from the many to the one. This redirection is very difficult because consciousness is born in a dense jungle of desires, habits, and attitudes. Here and there, a small ray of reality filters through the thick tangle of vegetation, but for the most part, consciousness is confined to the jungle. Now, this thicket, which once sheltered and nourished the developing consciousness, is now an impediment. Though no longer necessary, it still seems necessary, because consciousness, which must have an object, as yet has not found another object. Just as a baby eventually finds the womb that nourishes it a confinement, so consciousness at its first fullness is imprisoned in the objects that stimulated its development. However, consciousness in us is finite, because it is riveted to the objects of illusion. Baba, however, is infinite consciousness. He is conscious of the one, and is the one consciousness which is reality. And although consciousness develops within the limitations of the illusion and fixed on the objects of illusion, in reality it is indivisible. This is why Baba says he is simultaneously free from all limitations and bound in us. In me I am free, but in you I am bound. But consciousness, whether free in having reality for its object or bound to the objects of illusion, is one. The jungle thicket duality in which consciousness becomes full is the false ego or the ego mind. It stands between consciousness and the real ego, which is reality, the light that filters through this vegetation. Baba is the real ego, conscious of itself. This real ego, the one reality, while being the object of consciousness, is also inseparable from consciousness. The one that is the object of consciousness is also consciousness itself. And Baba uses the metaphor of the self or ego because it is more comprehensible than the language of consciousness. Isn't it easier to conceive of the self as a prisoner in a cell from which it must get free than think of consciousness riveted in inappropriate objects from which it must turn away? It is easier to think of the one reality as an ocean in which the self must dissolve than it is to think of the one consciousness which the apparently separate consciousness becomes when its object shifts from the illusion to reality. That it is the oneness of consciousness, however, that lies behind Baba's statement that the real I plays the parts of the innumerable finite eyes or ego minds. And Baba says that when the real I manifests, it begins playing its true role. And the real ego, playing the role of the false ego mind, gradually burns its way through the jungle, its bindings, to full freedom. The personification of illusion, reality, and ignorance helps us to approach the goal. Baba says, however, that nothing comes and nothing goes. Consciousness is all. But when misdirected, it is illusion. And when directed to reality, it is infinite. Its misdirection is ignorance. And Billy Baum goes on to describe our desires and habits as a dense jungle, an almost impenetrable thicket that we must break through. And just recently I received a poem from another Baba lover, Sarah Wentworth. She's a young girl about 21, comes up from Schenectady, who uses that same analogy, not ever having read this one from Billy Baum, and she calls it the birth of compassion. The door to my heart is wound about by brambles and ivy of mind and thought. Came a golden ray of melting love. Mehababa's name, light's gentle love. Among the thorns began to grow in the warmth of his light a beautiful rose. Among the brambles, soft roses born, and through the tangles grows, not being torn. Its petals are made of feelings and pain, and dear Baba's love brings them warmth and rain. Door of the heart, brambles and thorn, his name born a rose, gentle feeling and pain. In Baba's wind and raining time, the petals all fall to the door of my heart. My heart ached in sadness, a thorn still concealed. Let me sprint here. The way and rivers of compassion it yield. O Baba, I cried, your beauty you stole. My hopes have now vanished of freeing my soul. Yet there in the dawn amongst petals and stones lay a golden key shining bright as the sun. As the key was turned to open the door, the thorns and brambles held me no more. Baba, into the dawn flew my soul in a song, and the rain of cool tears tempered so long. Brilliant light flooding the innermost halls as the sound of your name in calling falls. I saw you not plant your rose seed, bearing the blossom of time blessed, blooming in thorn. And now in conclusion, here are a few thoughts that might help us all. This one is called God and Love and is taken from a message given in Nagpur in 1944 and printed in the Divya Vani. Quote, the spiritual path is like climbing up a mountain top through hills and dales and thorny woods along steep and dangerous precipices. If there is one thing that is most necessary for safe and sure survival at the top, it is love. All other qualities which are essential for the aspirants of the highest can and must come to them if they faithfully follow the whispers of the unerring guide of love. But if you lose hold of a mantle of this guide, there is only despair in store for you. The gateway to the highest state of being, infinite consciousness, one with God, is closed for all who do not have the courage to lose their separate existence in the relentless fire of divine love. The end of that quote. Another quote of a lighter note from Francis Brabazon's short pamphlet called The Lord is Our Brother. Quoting, "The avatar is our eternal Lord and playfellow. He loves the play he himself created. He loves our playing of the roles, and he loves playing with us in the roles. Be conscious of this, and fears will vanish, and there will be no savior to seek, but only our brother to serve in surrenderance and love and joy. God as the author of the play is our father, but God as avatar is at the same time our fellow player and the holder of the threads of our lives." Quote, end of quote. And the thread of our lives is, quote, "I am ever conscious that I am in you, but you are never conscious that I am in you. Daily I support you and share your consciousness. Now I want you to uphold me and share my consciousness one day." And then there is that very helpful passage, perhaps you all know it, I'm always telling people to read it, in The God-Man on page 286. It is a message which Baba gave during the Sahavas, or gathering of his lovers, in 1955 at Meribah. Quote, "I have already told you that love for God and obedience to a master are beyond the reach of man on his own, and that complete surrender is almost impossible. The best thing is for man to purify his heart. And the best way to cleanse the heart and to prepare for the stilling of the mind is to lead a normal life in the world, living in the midst of your day-to-day duties, responsibilities, likes and dislikes. They become the very means for the purification of your heart. And for the purification of your heart, leave your thoughts alone, but maintain constant vigil over your actions. Let thoughts come and go without putting them into action. It is better to feel angry sometimes rather than merely to repress anger. Although your mind may be angry, do not let your heart know it. Remain unaffected. If you never feel angry, you will be like a stone, in which form the mind is least developed. Let the thoughts of anger, lust, and greed come and go freely without putting them into words and deeds. Then the related impressions in your mind begin to wear out and become less harmful. When you do feel angry or have lustful thoughts, remember Baba at once. Let my name serve as a net around you." Now the other night, after having completed this talk that I had to give in Durham, I got to bed and I closed the book and I said, well, that's finished, there's nothing more now to say. And I went around saying goodnight and went to bed feeling quite free and easy. And the moment my head struck the pillow, there flashed from within the following words, love, joy, peace, happiness. In that order, love, joy, peace, happiness. So vividly and with no effort, just these four words, continuously through the night and into the morning and evening, and even beyond. I think, therefore, that perhaps in the above thoughts on consciousness that I've now given you, I may have overemphasized the consciousness of illusion and duality, with its wants and desires, and not perhaps the aspects of God, of Baba, God's infinite love consciousness, as the supreme goal of all consciousness. Baba has said, if there is a beginning, it is a beginning in consciousness. And if there is an ending, it is an ending in consciousness. And so perhaps Baba stepped in and reminded me that he was saying, have you forgotten what infinite divine love and consciousness mean? And the answer came, yes, love, joy, peace, happiness. All aspects of the one infinite love that can be shared by us all. And that's the end.